InvestorIdeas.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'll be going over a quick industry announcement from Tilray Brands Incorporated, Germany's revised cannabis plan, news out of Nova Scotia regarding medical coverage, as well as THC potency. So first today, starting with Tilray Brands Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ and the TSX as TLRY, who reported its financial results for the third fiscal quarter ended February 28th of this year, earlier this week, as well as announcing that it has entered into a definitive agreement to acquire Hexo Corp, trading on the NASDAQ and the TSX as Hexo, for an aggregate purchase price of approximately $56 million to be satisfied through the issuance of 0.4352 of Tilray common stocks for each outstanding Hexo share. Now, the completion of the arrangement is subject to customary and negotiated closing conditions, including Hexo shareholder approval and court approval, and is expected to close by June of this year. Irwin D. Simon, Tilray Brands Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, stated, "During the quarter, we continued to focus on our highest priorities, sustaining and growing the top line across core markets and geographies while optimizing the platform to achieve positive free cash flow on an accelerated timeline. Now, we're executing on both fronts and delivering revenue growth despite challenging market dynamics across Canada, Europe, and the U.S., as well as our 16th consecutive quarter of positive adjusted EBITDA." Now, Mr. Simon continued, "Looking ahead, we are focused on being a leading, most diversified cannabis lifestyle and CPG company in the world, and our strategy is to deliver on this vision, and it's centered on pursuing targeted growth opportunities, as reflected in our opportunistic acquisitions of both Montauk Brewing Company and Hexo, which has made significant strides in driving operating efficiency and improving profitability while continuing to invest in industry-leading brands. We're incredibly excited about our combined prospects moving forward with Hexo and expect a seamless integration of Hexo's businesses into our efficient, built-to-last platform. And at the same time, we will continue our relentless focus on cost and operational efficiencies and strengthening our industry-leading balance sheet to deliver sustained, profitable growth and shareholder value." So definitely is a pretty decent move within the industry. I don't think it's surprising anyone that we're continuing to see this level of consolidation, but this will make Tilray definitely a larger player, at least in the Canadian space right now, and then throughout most of North America as well. It doesn't really change a lot for them kind of internationally, but it does set them up a lot more as far as some of the brands that they'll get under the Hexo Corp umbrella. So I think that whenever you're listening to really anyone who's talking about the cannabis space right now, everyone's going to say that there still is a lot more consolidation that we're going to see going through. Obviously, this is a bit of a bigger side acquisition that we're seeing here. Most of the acquisitions and sort of moves we've seen within the space over the last 2 years have been a little bit on the smaller side. Obviously, there has been still a few big mergers and acquisitions as well. But in general, you've started to see companies focusing on partnering with smaller brands and looking at more of a microcultivator setup, as well as sort of unique niche brands and seeing them operate in different markets, at least in the U.S., especially when you're looking at MSOs, as a lot of the time they're looking at sort of self-sustaining small models that can focus on specific markets in specific states, do well in those areas, and not really require a lot of capital investment or not really require a lot of maintenance, and then can slowly be scaled up just through different distribution methods. Obviously, like I said, for Tilray here, for both Tilray and Hexo, they really have most of those things already covered. Hexo has a pretty strong footprint within Canada, and is starting to move into the U.S. as well. And now with Tilray, it just kind of expands the model. I do think that probably the bigger sort of advantage for Tilray in this acquisition is going to be some of the brands that Hexo has already acquired. Again, paying attention to them over the last couple of years, they've done a lot of growth and have partnered with a lot of smart brands. Obviously, within the Canadian market, there still are a lot of issues to be worked out. I don't think any company is really nailing it too well, other than, again, a few small-scaled companies. But in general, Hexo has done pretty well in most of the markets they've been in. And like I said, this does set Tilray up to be a pretty dominant force in North America. I still think that there's a lot of U.S. MSOs that are probably decently positioned as well against them and aren't really, you know, losing too much market share to Tilray. But definitely is a interesting sign for where the industry continues to head, and also something to pay attention to is just as far as we're still far away from seeing how this industry scales out, as far as eventually when there is an international market, how many companies are really going to be left as mainstay players, or is it just going to be kind of, you know, Coke and Pepsi type of model where you're going to see large scale distribution companies that handle pretty much everything. And then they just have a series of small brands that they partner with and work with. There's a lot of speculation still about how things are going to turn out, but you definitely see that there are some companies that are aiming to be that sort of Coke or Pepsi of the cannabis industry and trying to position themselves as somewhat of a global distribution hub. Obviously, there's a lot of difficulties with that as well, as sort of maintaining cash flow and positive revenue while trying to scale up, and also having difficulties with gaining investment, access to banking, all those separate things. So obviously, I think until you see the U.S. change its federal position, the industry is still somewhat up in the air. And moving next to Germany, which is, again, another big market that we could see a lot of potential with. Unfortunately, it looks like its government, which recently presented what many have been viewing as a scaled-back plan to liberalize the country's rules on cannabis, including decriminalizing possession of limited amounts and allowing members of non-profit cannabis clubs to buy marijuana and for recreational purposes. So the German government revised the plans following the talk with the European Union's Executive Commission. Agricultural Minister Cem Özdemir said that the EU law sets its limits and we must respect that, but that we will also say that we are pushing. Lauterbach had cautioned all along that the government would only proceed with its original plan if it got the green light from the EU. The proposed system would let German residents 18 and older join non-profit cannabis clubs with a maximum of 500 members each, which would be allowed to grow cannabis for members' personal consumption. Individuals would be allowed to buy up to 25 grams per day or up to 50 grams per month, a figure that would be limited to 30 grams for adults under the age of 21. Now, membership in multiple clubs wouldn't be allowed, and authorities could limit the number of clubs, and the club's costs could be covered by membership fees, which would be staggered according to how much cannabis the members use. The health minister argued that Germany's existing policies have failed. He said that the government's aim is to offer greater safety, protect consumers against contaminated and toxic products, and reduce drug-related crime. We're not creating a problem. We are trying to solve a problem. Lauterbach insisted. Now, he reiterated that Germany doesn't want to emulate the model of the neighboring Netherlands, which combines decriminalization with little market regulation. So I think a lot of people were looking to see a different system roll out. Obviously, that was what was initially suggested, was that it was going to be much broader recreational plan. This is kind of similar to what Canada and certain states have had in the past, of somewhat of a gray market where it is still technically legal, but there's sort of weird regulations and weird standards around it. I do think that in general, this kind of shows that as much as there's a lot of speculation around the EU market and when that's going to really take over and when you're going to see massive legislative changes, I think there's still a lot of caution in that market. I think that you're not going to see any sort of move to a recreational market in any EU marketplace anytime soon. Again, Germany was supposed to be kind of the leader with regards to this. And like I said, they've kind of pushed back, I think, in a big way from where people expected things to go, which is unfortunate. At least they are moving forward with some form of recreational model. It is still going to allow more access. It's not all bad, but I think when people were looking at what sort of early speculation could be and what the German government had initially proposed, this isn't really what a lot of people were looking for. There's obviously a lot of issues as well when it comes to supply chains, when it comes to distribution, when it comes to allowing businesses to enter into this market. With having this sort of limited club model, you're going to see a lot of these businesses which have been positioning themselves, a lot of Canadian businesses who have been positioning themselves with the German medical market to basically transition into some form of recreational sales, now are kind of hindered with that. So I think you're going to see probably a bit of a pullback from a lot of companies as far as how much interest and time they're investing into the EU market until you see sort of how this pans out and what becomes of this once it's built out. Yeah, just kind of unfortunate. I would have, I think a lot of people were hoping that Germany was really going to push hard on this. But again, it does show that there still is a lot of hesitancy, which is weird, you know, when you consider most European countries' actual relationship with cannabis. There's really not a lot of reason for them to have the amount of stigma against it that they do in modern times, but somehow now they're more, you know, cannabis or anti-cannabis than somehow, you know, the US and Canada are, which seems strange when you look at a lot of the early criminalization things came out of that part of the world. So that's a little bizarre, but I think that that's still a step forward. But I think that, yeah, you're going to have to wait probably a couple of years now. There's a lot of pilot programs going on throughout different European nations, which are looking at, again, conducting more studies because the world just needs more and more studies on cannabis, even though, again, there's just an insane amount of data that's out there from medical patients, from people who have been consuming cannabis for, you know, 30 plus years, from Israel, and from old studies that have been since, you know, sort of dug up as the research has been allowed again. But apparently none of those studies quite matter, and everyone's still concerned about tainted cannabis and how they're going to die from it, which I'll get to at the end. But next, we're going to be looking at what was recently reported in The Star. Out of Nova Scotia, Canada, a six-year-old girl and her parents were at the Nova Scotia legislature this week to lobby for the province to cover the cost of using cannabis oil to treat her seizures. Kaylee and Nick Jones and their daughter Sophie were at the House of Assembly to present a petition with over 1,300 signatures to support a Nova Scotia covering the cost of CBD-based medicines for children with life-threatening conditions. Now, the little girl was born with a rare chromosome abnormality that causes epilepsy, ataxia, migraines, anxiety, and low muscle tone. Kaylee Jones, 29, said that the family spends roughly $400 a month on the CBD oil, which she says has helped reduce her daughter's seizures dramatically compared to conventional medications. Now, we've been sacrificing a lot of time and effort to fundraise, said Kaylee Jones. If we could have a solution, we could not have to worry about it and would be a big financial burden off of our shoulders and of others. Now, researchers at Toronto's Hospital of Sick Children in 2018 reported reductions in seizures of children with Dravet syndrome, a rare genetic form of epilepsy, who received CBD oil with a small amount of THC. And Nova Scotia Health Minister Michelle Thompson says that her department is awaiting the results of a review by Health Canada before approving funding of the medicine. She said during the interview that while she's aware that there is a real-life evidence that emerges, the department must take a standardized approach to approving medicines for funding. I think it's important that we have a consistent way in which we add things to the formulary, and there is a very rigorous process. We have a responsibility to ensure the things we cover are evidence-based. We want to continue to follow that process. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who would find a lot of irony in Health Canada talking about things of that regard, similar if someone were to say something like that from the FDA. When you look at the types of medications that do get approved, even the current regime of anti-seizure medications, which for Sophie in this case had negative side effects that led to regular hospital visits in the first 3 years of her life, whereas the CBD-based medicines have controlled the frequency and duration of her seizures to the point where she no longer needs trips by the ambulance and has fewer migraines, less anxiety, and more mobility. And really, you can look at, there's the Charlotte's Web documentary. There's a bunch of companies that really promoted the hell out of this early on when you're looking at legalization efforts in the U.S. as well as in Canada. John Hopkins has done studies. There's just an insane amount of studies when you look at epilepsy and autism in children that really just shows that CBD is probably one of the most effective and safe treatments that's available for them. That's not saying that there is no risk with anything, but as far as anyone I know or really any studies that I've seen have shown so far, there is actually no negative results as far as actual adverse events with regards to CBD being administered for anyone with epilepsy or autism for children. So you could say that, you know, there have been probably some cases where people didn't receive a positive effect, as in there was no result from taking the CBD. And that's usually been the case where there hasn't been a high enough dosage, or if it's been received from sort of a low-grade source. So obviously there's different calibers of CBD. There's whether it's full spectrum, there's whether it's delivered in the right methods, and then there's the dosage. So we have seen lots of issues when it comes to CBD studies overall, and that there's a lot of times where basically people were given a product that was faulty and they didn't receive any benefits. They didn't receive any negative side effects or anything, but it didn't help them. So it was just kind of a waste of time. And a lot of the time that is pointed at as the ineffectiveness of CBD, which is unfortunate. But unfortunately, not all cannabis and not all CBD is treated equally, and it doesn't all have the same effect. That's what I'll be talking about at the end here when it comes to THC potency as well. The entourage effect is something that's been discussed heavily within the cannabis industry, how the entire plant works in tandem with all the different cannabinoids together, and the terpene profile is what makes the product more or less effective, even as a medicine. And so when you're looking at CBD, the same type of considerations need to be looked at, as far as if some of these studies didn't create any positive results. Usually it's the product that they were administering and the dosage that they were administering it at. But again, when you're comparing this to, in this case, this is a real person, and their real testimony is that their previous regime of anti-seizure medications had negative side effects. And that's been the case for a lot of children. That's been the case over and over again, is that the current medication that's available for them is quite traumatic, and unfortunately can really lead to a lot of negative side effects. It can lead to a real deterioration of life, and this can be not only traumatic for the child, it can absolutely have huge effects on the family. And so this is one of those things where you would hope that common sense would just prevail and people would say, okay, well, we have no evidence supporting that there is any sort of negative adverse events that have come out of these CBD products. We can at least offer trial options and, you know, start considering how this gets paid for in certain circumstances, especially when it's life-threatening in this case. And it's very frustrating that this has been a big issue when you're looking at the medical side. And this is an important sort of case study to look at, is if this gets approved, if this gets pushed through with the Nova Scotia government, is when you're looking at cannabis as a medication, insurance and overall government payment options haven't really come into play. Yes, you can still get cannabis medications, so, you know, they still have access to this CBD-based medicine, so their daughter's life is able to improve. But at the same time, they have to pay for this out of pocket, and some of the times they can't even go to a traditional medical source just due to the lack of availability or the lack of trained pharmacists that are in the area to sort of administer that. So, and it's even worse when you look at it, again, in certain states where the medical systems aren't as well developed. And again, different parts of Canada have different issues with this. But in general, a big issue is that even though you're having all these studies with veterans, with people with PTSD, with people with autism and epilepsy, with people with all sorts of different ailments, with cancer patients, what you're not seeing is any real endorsement from insurance providers. What you're not seeing is any real endorsement from medical coverage, in that almost all of these still have to be paid for out of pocket. And this is actually one of the things that's a deterrent factor when it comes to people choosing cannabis as a medication, is the fact that they have to pay for it out of pocket in almost all medical markets. And again, there's some efforts being made, but very small scale, and they're not really looking at this as a big issue. And it's one of the biggest issues when it comes to how this actually gets broadened as a real medicine, is it has to be taken seriously also from medical coverage providers, which it currently, you know, there's some reimbursement options, but most of those, again, aren't as sort of robust and effective, especially if comparing those to just traditional medicine. And it could be just as cheap as well. Like, there's no logistical reason why CBD products can't be made extremely cheap, even cheaper than most traditional medicines. So it's definitely, these types of case studies are important to pay attention to, and it's one I would definitely recommend paying attention to how this develops and if this goes through with the Nova Scotia government and if they're actually going to approve this with Health Canada. But this is the type of thing that does need to happen, and more of these cases, unfortunately, need to be brought forward, and you need more people petitioning the governments in this fashion to actually get them to say that not only is this a medicine we're allowed to take, but it's a medicine that's covered. Because, you know, again, just because you can have the theoretical access to it doesn't mean it'll be available in the town you live in. It doesn't mean that there will be doctors who are willing or capable of prescribing it. It doesn't mean that there will be pharmacies that are willing to sell it and have it a multitude of products available. And it doesn't mean as well that you're actually going to get any reimbursement or coverage of that product. So you could still be basically, you know, and this is what a lot of the time forces people to go to the illicit market, is when you're buying this for medical reasons, you want to make sure that your product's quite high quality. And you're going to be paying a lot potentially out of pocket if you're going to a traditional store or medical system. Whereas buying it from an illegal operation, if you know the person and you've seen the product and you do know that it's at the right standard, you could even send it to a lab. Those options are available, so you could prove that your product is going to hit the quality levels that you need. It's going to be a lot more cheap for you than going the traditional route. And again, if there was coverage, we would be able to see more people and a more accurate assessment of how many people would use this as medicine and sort of where the demand is at and where the need is at. So lastly today, and it's something I've kind of alluded to, multiple news outlets have cited a recent study regarding THC potency conducted by research at the University of Northern Colorado, which tested samples of cannabis sold at several Colorado dispensaries. Overall, they found that the product labels promised a potency higher than was actually in the bags. "I don't believe what's on the label," said Mitt McLaughlin, one of the authors of the study and a professor of biological sciences at the University of Northern Colorado. "We just don't have enough information for consumers about whether or not you can trust what's being produced." Now, to conduct the study, researchers bought 23 different samples from 10 different dispensaries in Denver, Fort Collins, and Garden City. They tested each sample, and 18 of the 23 samples, the researchers found levels of potency below what was listed on the labels. Depending on the bag tested, some products contained 40 to 50% less THC. "These results make clear that the consumers are often purchasing cannabis that has a much lower THC potency than advertised," the authors of the study concluded. So, while this study is nothing really new to the industry, again, I find it interesting that a bunch of different news outlets picked it up, like, oh my god, this is, you know, news. Surprisingly, cannabis isn't being properly labeled and we're not able to test the THC properly. This has been an issue for a long while. Again, the sort of things that they cite in this, and this is what this specific study cites. And I will say, you know, there is some truth to it, but it also disregards the fact of problems we've had in the Canadian market. But basically, they cite that the fact that this is still state by state in the U.S. is the main reason why you're having these issues with labeling and sort of overall quality control and label control within the industry. Is the fact that each of these states has different regulations, they have different testing methods, they have different labeling regulations, and so because of that, companies can kind of do different things. In Canada, we have a federal system, and we still have issues with lots of companies producing product that isn't hitting what their labels suggest. And that's when it comes to THC content, when it comes to CBD content, when it comes to the actual strains themselves. There's been issues all the time. And really, this just comes down to the fact that both people regulating the industry and people within the industry are still actually very new to this industry. And there's a lot of things that the average person, even the person within the industry, doesn't know or gets wrong, not out of any sort of malice or, you know, sort of corruption, but just because people are still learning a lot of this stuff. And a big factor is that, you know, how these products are packaged, how they're tested, where they're tested, and how these things work is the fact that, unfortunately, cannabis isn't like alcohol. So when you make one batch, individual buds can test higher and lower. And that's a real actual factor, and it's a problem for a lot of these companies, is that, you know, when they're getting their product tested, they're sending it off to a facility most of the time, a third-party lab. They're testing it, and they're testing it based off of a percentage of, you know, bud that they send them. Well, that's maybe one plant. So are they going to send a test for every single plant? Because even though these plants are all grown in the same environments, many studies have proven that each individual plant creates its own terpene content, creates its own cannabinoid levels, and they can be fundamentally different even though they're all grown in the exact same facility under identical conditions. And even though cannabis companies and growers love to sort of propagate this idea that, oh, we can control it down to this exact science. The reality is we can't. And the other reality is that THC is just one factor. So, you know, you're trying to measure one specific ingredient that's among hundreds, if not thousands, of other cannabinoids and other components of the plant. And those other components also have an overall effect on how the, you know, high or the medical benefits actually hit you. And this is kind of the big problem we have within this industry, is that what you're seeing is the discussion is always around THC. And it's interesting that, again, a bunch of news articles picked this up and started talking about how, oh, surprise, all these cannabis companies were lying about how much THC is in their product. Yet, if you go back a few months and over the last few years, one of the biggest things most mainstream media outlets have been talking about is the fact that the dangers of how high the THC is in all of these products. Well, it turns out people were lying. So they didn't even have that high of a THC. So what were we talking about when people were talking about greening out and supposedly overdosing and needing to go to the ER and all these different things? Well, it turns out they weren't even getting the same THC content that they were supposedly saying was, you know, so dangerous to them. So a lot of this just goes to the fact that most everybody still doesn't really know shit about the cannabis industry or how that plant functions or how it functions with us. We're always comparing it basically to alcohol. We're comparing it to blood alcohol content and alcohol percentage. But the reality is that that's not how THC works. THC alone doesn't actually hit you as much as THC in tandem with other cannabinoids and terpenes. So you can have sort of a pure THC extract and you can have a much higher percentage, and you could have a full spectrum extract as well with a lower THC percentage that could hit you much stronger. And this is kind of the weird thing, is that alcohol is very simple in that, you know, alcohol content, your blood alcohol content, this is very simple science to measure. It's simple to breathalyze. It's simple to understand. Cannabis is not that simple. Again, there's a lot of other things to be considered. Too much THC is supposedly dangerous. You know, hemp with any trace of THC is no longer considered hemp, you know, and everything is about the psychoactive effect of THC. But realistically, there's other components within the cannabis plant that also create that psychoactive effect. Even when people are taking CBD products, they don't experience this high in the same way that you would from a high THC product, but they still experience a psychoactive effect. It does affect their brain. It affects it in a positive way most of the time. Relieves anxiety, relieves stress. Makes them feel a little bit more calm and relaxed. Those are still effects on the brain. They just aren't this big dramatic high effect. And even again, that dramatic high effect isn't necessarily just the THC content. There's a bunch of other chemicals that are all interacting there. And it does make you wonder of how this industry needs to evolve if you want to see us move away from this discussion. And realistically, it has to come from both, you know, regulators, consumers, media outlets, growers, the companies themselves, as we need to move past the THC model where you're no longer trying to promote how high the THC content is, because that's really not the determining factor for how high the product gets you. Again, different people are going to react to different ways. And if we don't start having standards that are based more off of the overall effect as opposed to THC, CBD, these things, again, are trying to compare cannabis to other industries. We're trying to compare it to pharmaceutical industries. We're trying to compare it to agriculture. We're trying to compare it to alcohol. It's none of these things. It's a different product. It has to be treated in a different way. And that's kind of the biggest thing holding back this industry from really evolving to a next level industry where it is treated differently globally and it is treated properly as medicine, is to move away from this discussion around a single chemical in the plant, which again is easy to think about in very sort of simplistic terms of, all right, THC equals high, but at the end of the day, that's not the truth. And many consumers have been tricked by that exact sort of ideology, is that they can smoke something that's lower THC but get much higher from it, because how those terpenes and cannabinoids interact with their endocannabinoid system gets them much higher. And it is very individualistic. You know, there's been lots of different studies and discussions within the industry of how even just interacting with the plant from growing it yourself can dramatically affect how it impacts you as your overall effect. And people could be saying, well, that's just in your mind, but that is kind of the weird thing with cannabis, is a lot of it is just in your mind. Similarly to how a lot of the people who were probably reporting, oh my god, the THC is so high, were actually just lying, because it turns out that no, the companies were lying, and the THC wasn't as high as they initially thought. So it's interesting to see how things turn around over time. But I do think that if you're looking at how this industry needs to move forward next, companies that are looking at advertising much more based off of effect and strain as opposed to THC content, I think is where things need to head and will eventually head as the industry and consumers continue to become more educated. That's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the InvestorIdeas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.